Welcome to the Martin Bailey Photography Blogcast. It's November 9, 2015, and this is episode 496. After using the Canon EOS 5DSR digital SLR camera for just over 4 months now, today I'm going to do a follow-up review to let you know how I'm getting on with this new ultra-high resolution offering from Canon. If you didn't catch my earlier 5DS review, you can check that out in episode 478, which you can find at mbp.ac/478. That review contained a lot of test photos, and I went into detail on how it is totally possible to shoot with the 5DSR handheld and still get sharp photos. This has been one of the main things that people have been asking about since that review, so I'll include an update on this now that I've been shooting in the field in Namibia and Iceland, and I'll share some example photos with some 100% crops to really show you the results that I'm continuing to get with this camera. And we'll touch on a lot of other areas that people have been asking about as well. Remember, if you would like to view the images as large as possible, still web size, but the largest available view that you can get of the images that we'll be sharing today, go to my blog and directly to this post using the link mbp.ac/496 for episode 496. My initial impressions as I started to use the Canon EOS 5DSR was just wow. I didn't hold anything back as I relayed my enthusiasm for this new camera from Canon, and I know that some people were probably thinking that this was partly coming from the newness and finally having a camera with amazing ultra-high resolution that our friends in the Nikon and Sony camps were already enjoying. I have to tell you though that after shooting with the 5DSR for the last 4 months, I'm as in love with it now as I was when we first met. In fact, the first vote of confidence came as I started to prepare for my Namibia tour and realized that I could not use my old 5D Mark III as a backup camera. It's a great camera, and I don't want anyone still shooting with one to take this the wrong way. But I knew that if anything was to happen to my 5DSR, I could not bear to go back to the 22 megapixels of my 5DS Mark III now. A few years ago, when I almost killed my 5D Mark III in Iceland, seeing just how weatherproof it was really hard to shoot landscape for a few days with the 18 megapixels of the 1DX, until the 5D came back to life a few days later. The 1DX was my backup camera on that trip, and I still hated having to shoot with the lower resolution, and that was only 4 megapixels different. So dropping from 50 megapixels to 22, if I had to fall back on my 5D Mark III, would have broken my heart. The image quality from all of these cameras is of course incredible, so if you don't need any more than 22 megapixels, then the 5D Mark III is still an amazing camera to own. But I felt so strongly that I personally couldn't handle dropping back to that resolution if something happened, that I actually bought a second 5DSR body shortly before leaving for Namibia. Of course, with both cameras being exactly the same, that meant that, you know, it wasn't a backup body as such. I just shot equally with both cameras, and it actually saved me from having to change lenses in dusty conditions as much as I would have done if I'd just had the one main body. So I'm not only still in love with my 5DSR, I'm now two-timing her. So let's look at some examples of images as I reiterate that for me, I found there to be absolutely no problem shooting handheld with the 5DSR, despite the high resolution. I should add, though, that I have been perhaps more conscious than ever of using the focal length as the minimum shutter speed rule of thumb, even with lenses that have image stabilization. This means, of course, that, say for example, I'm shooting at 100mm, I would try to make my shutter speed at least a 100th of a second or faster. If shooting at 50mm, my minimum shutter speed would be ideally a 50th of a second or faster. Of course, there are other factors that come into play, like going faster to stop movement in the subject, but using this as a minimum shutter speed when hand-holding the camera has pretty much prevented me from seeing any issues with blurred shots due to high resolution. I have shot some images slower than this, often getting good results, but that increases the risk of blurred images, and yes, I have had some at slower shutter speeds. For this photograph of a juvenile blacksmith lapwing shot handheld in Namibia, I was at a focal length of 400mm and therefore selected a shutter speed of a 400th of a second at f8 ISO 500. This was shot with the new Canon EF 100-400mm lens, the Mark II. Here now is a 100% crop of the head of the lapwing, and I think you'll agree that the sharpness is there. Again, go to the blog to look at these, but click on the image as well. Widen your browser window up a little bit and click on the images, because there's a larger image behind all of the embedded ones. Remember too that if you want to stop the images from advancing automatically while you study the detail, just place your mouse over the image. Another thing that I know people have been concerned about is the possibility of seeing moiré in photographs shot with the 5DSR, as it has the low-pass filter effect cancelled, which gives you sharper images than the standard 5DS body, but it increases the risk of getting nasty patterns called moiré forming in man-made textures and some naturally occurring textures. Well, having shot some 8,000 photographs of natural subjects since June, at this point I've still not seen a single image that exhibits moiré. Bird feathers do seem to be causing a little bit of moiré for some people, so I think that I might see this in some of the photos of larger birds that I'll be photographing during my Hokkaido Winter Wonderland workshops in January and February next year, as bird feathers can form an evenly distributed pattern, but I don't expect this to be a big problem. Even the conversation that I've seen online about this seems to be somewhat over-dramatized. The tendency for people to get really worked up about gear seems to be getting worse as the technology advances and the pace of development increases. But there does seem to be a lot of heated debate about the 5DS and camera technology and gear in general. People have tried really hard to pigeonhole the 5DS as a landscape and still life camera because they say that it can't be used handheld, for example. Despite the most vocal forum members around the world not even owning one of these cameras, people generally raise a ruckus to protect themselves from their own egos and emotions. For one reason or another, they decide that they don't want to invest in a new piece of gear, which is their choice, of course. But instead of just making the decision and being happy with it, they have to spend countless hours online talking about why they don't need the thing that they've decided not to buy, or why what they already have is the best possible gear to own. And I'm pretty sure it's just their way of justifying their decision, and probably rooted in a desire to actually own the thing that they're getting all worked up about. One such conversation that was brought to my attention was the fuss about Really Right Stuff redesigning the L bracket for the 5DS. As I mentioned in my earlier reviews, the 5D Mark III L bracket fits fine on the 5DS, and I have continued to use mine on my first body without problems. But the guys at Really Right Stuff decided to take the opportunity, especially with the higher resolution in mind, to redesign the bracket. They have built in an additional component that fixes the top of the L bracket to the camera strap loop on the side of the camera, as you can see in this photograph. You basically clamp the silver component that you can see here to the camera strap loop, and then you fix the camera strap to a new loop and the bracket. It works well, and although you have to unscrew this and, you know, to get the L bracket off now, you have to unscrew it all, it's like a 30-second job, and in my opinion, totally worth it for the additional stability and security. The reason people are getting upset, though, is because they see it as an unnecessary design change and therefore have to give Really Right Stuff a hard time because now they've got to justify not buying the latest model. Hello? So what? If you really believe that the new design has no benefits, then just use your old bracket. Or if you never owned an old bracket, buy the old Mark III bracket or buy from another manufacturer. Sure, the new design is more expensive. It has additional components that cost money to develop and produce. I have continued to use both brackets because I have two 5DSRs and needed an extra one, so I thought it was worth getting the updated version. I can't say that I've noticed any problems with my old one on the 5DS, but I haven't really used it much in portrait orientation either. I do reach for the camera with the newly designed L bracket a little more when shooting from a tripod, though. You know, why risk seeing an issue, right? Anyway, I won't go on about this anymore, but really it's bewildering to me how some people seem to spend so much energy complaining about a company's decision to innovate and, dare I say it, try to increase their bottom line. Really Right Stuff have never been a budget camera support company, so what's the point in getting all bent out of shape about this? Another assumed issue with the 5DS that I dispelled in my earlier review was that people, including me before the 5DS was actually released, thought that a camera of this resolution would have poor high ISO capabilities. We looked at a series of test shots in direct comparison with the 5D Mark III and saw that there was very little difference between the two cameras. Based on my tests, I've set my mental soft ceiling for how high I'll take the 5DSR ISO to, up at 3,200, but also using up to ISO 6,400 if necessary, and 12,800 at a push. I shot this photograph of a Himba lady at ISO 6,400 with a shutter speed of an 80th of a second at a 50mm focal length. The only light entering the hut was a small entrance that you have to crouch down to walk through, but it was not practical to try to set up any kind of lights or reflection, plus I prefer this kind of lighting. That's why I asked her to go inside the hut. Here now is a 100% crop of just the lady's face with some of her clay-covered hair. Again, click on the image on the blog to view it at full web size. As you can see, there is a little bit of grain, but for ISO 6400 and what this has enabled me to do, I'm not concerned about this at all. I should also mention that I did not apply any noise cancellation to this image in Lightroom, apart from reducing the exposure slightly to increase the mood of the photograph and adding a bit of a vignette. This is straight out of the camera. Now, before you run out and shoot a bunch of images at ISO 6400 because I told you it was okay, note that you have to expose your images more carefully to maximize ISO performance. I always shoot using a technique called ETTR, or exposed to the right, which means that I expose my images so that the information on the histogram is as close to the right shoulder of the histogram as possible without overexposing the image. You can see in this photograph that the whites of her eyes are very white, which is just how I wanted them to be. As I just mentioned, I actually reduced the exposure slider in Lightroom for this image to increase the mood of the image, but shooting this nice and bright and then adjusting that way really helps to keep any noise that can creep in at bay, especially in shadow areas. Check out episode 381 at mbp.ac/381 for more information on exposing to the right. As I look through images from the last 4 months, the hair on the back of my neck stands up as I explore the incredible level of detail captured in these 50 megapixel images. Here's a wide angle photo made with the EF 11 to 24mm f4L lens at the Jökulsárlón Glacial Lagoon in Iceland. This was shot at f14 for a 200th of a second at ISO 100. And here is a 100% crop of the center of the bottom edge of the photograph. This is pixel for pixel cropped exactly at 1440 by 960 pixels, the same as the other crops. But when you consider how crisp and clear the detail is compared to how small a portion of the original image it is, I'm sure you'll agree that this is pretty impressive. Of course, if necessary, this enables you to crop in very tightly on photographs, especially if you only need it for web use. I personally prefer not to do that, but the option is there if you need it. Just don't post anything too heavily cropped somewhere that it might end up seeing a request for commercial use or a print, as you couldn't print something like this much larger than a postage stamp. Here's another fun example of the amount of detail. This photograph almost feels a little bit Blade Runner-ish to me when Harrison Ford uses a computer to delve into details of a photograph trying to find some clues to the whereabouts of the escaped replicants. This young Himba man was standing in front of the doorway of the hut inside which I photographed the woman that we looked at earlier, and I crouched down in front of the hut to get a good angle. You don't have to take my word for it though. We can just look in his eyes for proof. Again, click on the image here to view the larger web version. This was shot at f5.6 for a 100th of a second, ISO 320 with my 24 to 70mm f2.8 lens. So far, we've looked at images from some of Canon's highest quality lenses. The new 100-400mm, the 24-70mm f2.8L lens, and the 11-24mm f4L lens. And these are, of course, coping fine with the high resolution of the sensor. In fact, the feeling that I get having tested all of my lenses now is that the 5DS is actually bringing out more from my lenses than my 5D Mark III did at 22 megapixels. I was starting to get a little bit disappointed with the results of my 70-200mm f2.8L lens, for example, but the 5DSR has totally revived this great workhorse lens. Probably the lowest quality lens that I own is the 40mm f2.8 STM pancake lens. I sometimes drop this on the camera almost as a glorified body cap because it's so small I can still drop the camera into the space in my camera bag that I use usually where just for storing the body without a lens on it. I sometimes put this lens on the camera when I'm just going for a walk around town too, and I don't necessarily need one of my bigger zoom lenses. It's also just a nice focal length as a walkabout lens. Well, just to show you the image quality, here's a photograph of my favorite building here in Tokyo, which you've seen before, I know. Of course, I've converted this to black and white, but take a look at the 100% crop from the building. And again, I'm sure you'll agree that the image quality is totally acceptable and this is from a $149 lens. Canon actually released a recommended lens list with all of the lenses that they considered to be good enough to work with the 5DS and the 5DSR cameras. Sadly, just a few days later, they took the page down. But do a search on the web if you're interested, as there are plenty of copies of it around. I don't know why Canon took the page down. Maybe it was too controversial and caused a stir with people that didn't find their favorite lenses included. It is actually quite an extensive list though, so it does show how confident Canon are in the ability of these high resolution bodies to work with their lenses. I just wish they had the guts to stick by their original decision to publish the list. The other bit of pigeonholing that people have been doing is trying to rule out the 5DS as not being capable of shooting wildlife. Of course, at 5 frames per second, it's not the ideal camera for wildlife, especially birds in flight when it's nice to have more frames to choose the best wing position from. But as far as my field tests have shown, the autofocus on the 5DS is very capable of locking on and tracking with subjects, as we can see in this image of a flock of flamingos flying in front of a sand dune in Namibia. And here is the 100% crop of the two flamingos from the center of the frame. I shot this handheld at f8 with a shutter speed of 1/800th of a second, ISO 1250 at 312mm with the 100-400mm lens. This amount of detail is plenty for me, so you know, this kind of photograph is totally possible. No complaints here at all. Although I might get some more birds in flight shots this year, I will be using my 5DSR bodies in for the snow monkeys and the cranes, swans and sea eagles that we shoot in Hokkaido on my Winter Wonderland tours in January and February next year. So I'll report back on how the cameras fare in this really challenging situation during my tour updates. If you don't visit my site regularly, maybe you could sign up for our newsletters, specifically the blog posts via email newsletter, so that you don't miss those updates early next year. I actually shoot with 3 bodies a lot of the time on my Hokkaido tours, so I will be taking the 7D Mark II with me as well, but I'm pretty sure that I'll stick with the 5DS bodies for the majority of my shooting. I started photographing the wildlife in Hokkaido with my old 10D, with 7 focus points and just 3 frames per second. And I have some shots from back then that I'm still proud of, so I'll probably just make it work. My thinking is that I'd rather have less images at 50 megapixels than more at 20 megapixels. That choice for you is yours to make, of course. I personally would just rather have fewer high-resolution files. Although the 7D Mark II is an absolutely wonderful camera, if I find myself using it very little during the upcoming winter season, I'll probably sell it in March next year. One other question that I have been asked a lot is whether or not I'm holding on to my Canon EOS 1DX body now that I've got the 5DS. And bearing in mind that I also have the 7D Mark II, well, the answer is yes. I actually sold the 1DX to help pay for my second 5DSR. The 1DX is another great camera, but the 7D Mark II at almost a quarter of the price is just as good, if not better in some aspects. So I knew that I was not going to shoot as much with the 1DX anymore, and there's no reason for me to keep it just sitting around collecting dust. The last thing that I wanted to touch on is something that I was not able to really report on my early reviews, and that's the print quality from these beautiful big image files from the 5DSR. Well, with all of the traveling I've been doing, I still haven't printed a lot, but from what I have done, I can happily report that the print quality is every bit as amazing as I thought it was going to be. This is one of the major benefits of such a high-resolution camera. For example, I printed this image that I'm showing you now. This is just the web version. This isn't the image, the print itself. But I printed this image of the Himba people herding their goats on 24 by 36 inch paper, including borders, with the actual printed image area at 20 by 30 inches. This gave me a native resolution for print of 285 ppi or pixels per inch. I printed directly from Lightroom and turned on print resolution, the checkbox under the print job panel, and set it to 300 ppi. So Lightroom upsized the image very slightly for me during the printing. I can of course do this with smaller files, like the 22 megapixel files from the 5D Mark III, but at the same size, a 24 by 36 inch print, they have a native resolution of 192 pixels per inch. And having printed these images out many times at this size, experience tells me that you have to use a third-party tool like On1 Software's Perfect Resize to increase the size of the image to 300 ppi before you print to ensure that the final print looks any good. If you don't upsize for a print of this size, the image looks soft and quite poor quality. It does work, of course. The quality can be brought back by upsizing, and you don't generally look at a 2x3 foot print with your nose against the paper, unless you're a photographer, of course. But having the higher resolution right there in your base image not only removes the necessity to upsize for print, but you aren't actually creating pixels. You have enough resolution to send straight to the printer, so the end results are just stunning. I've photographed the face of the print to give you some idea, as you can see here. Although it really doesn't come across, you have to dive into the photo in real life to fully appreciate how beautiful these images are when printed. I printed this image on Breathing Colour's new Pura Bagasse Smooth Matte Media and photographed the face of the print in my studio with a Profoto studio light in a 2x3 foot softbox. So it's quite smooth light and off to the right at about a 30 degree angle so that it highlights the texture of the paper just a little bit as well. But hopefully it gives you an idea of the fidelity of the print. The hairs on the goats and every detail is faithfully reproduced. And remember, the printed area here is 20 by 30 inches, so it's a good size print. I have to admit, I'd not even noticed that trampled plastic bottle between the little goat's legs in this photograph until I looked at the large print. As usual, I did go over the print at 100% to check for dust spots before printing. But it wasn't until I saw the actual print that I saw that bottle. And that to me is part of the fun of printing this large. And now with this amount of resolution. Having processed all of these photos over the last few months, with much of the editing done on my MacBook Pro Retina computer and the rest done on my 27-inch iMac, I can still confirm that I'm not feeling any stress with the speed of the images being displayed on the screen, because the files are much larger than my previous camera. Sure, it can take a few seconds sometimes for images to load if they don't have a preview built, but if you build previews on import, it's usually less than a second, if not almost instant. I generally set up Lightroom to create standard preview images of 2,880 pixels, which is big enough for me to get my initial view on both my MacBook Pro and my iMac. Then, of course, when I jump into the develop module to make any adjustment, Lightroom creates a larger preview anyway, as required. But this too is usually a pretty quick process, just a second or so. So if you're the impatient type, this may concern you, but Personally, I think the additional information recorded in the images is worth the wait. There was a comment on my original review of the 5DSR about the amount of time required for the preview of the files to display on the back of the camera after making an exposure. This does take a little longer with the 5DS, but honestly, I hadn't even noticed it until the guy that mentioned it mentioned it. The reason I bring this up is because you may be concerned about some things that simply don't bother me, and if they don't bother me, they're unlikely to end up in this kind of review. If you have any questions or would like me to test something specifically, and if it's not too time consuming, drop me a note in the comments on the blog post at mbp.ac/496 and I'll try to answer you as best as I can. We'll start to wrap it up there for this 4 months in review, but I do hope you found this useful. If you're on the fence regarding whether or not to pull the trigger on the 5DS or the 5DSR, you really don't have any reason from the camera's technology point of view to hold off. Of course, not everyone needs or wants this level of resolution in a camera, and if that's you, don't sweat it. No one is forcing you to buy this camera. If you are undecided for any other reason that we touched on today, though, please don't be. It's an amazing piece of engineering. If you do decide to buy one and you shop with our friends at B&H, please use the links that I've embedded in this blog post. You know that the opinions expressed here are my honest, from-the-heart opinions and in no way biased to make you buy these cameras. I paid for both of mine with hard-earned cash, just as you will if you spring for one, but I put a lot of work into these reviews and you can help to support my efforts by using our links. As I mentioned in my initial review, I've never been happier to be a Canon user. I know that mirrorless are great and a lot of people are getting amazing results with them, but for me, I still like the full SLR format and the range of lenses, autofocus, and having everything at my fingertips just feels great. The addition of the 11-24mm lens and the release of the updated 100-400mm lens and then the release of these 5DS camera bodies have pretty much removed any temptation to stray from the fold, at least for the next few years, I imagine. Thanks very much for listening today. If you enjoy this podcast, please do share a link with your friends. And if you don't already, please subscribe in iTunes or your favorite podcast program to ensure uninterrupted delivery. You can find me on Google+, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, etc. And links to everything that I'm up to are at martinbaileyphotography.com, so do drop by and take a look. I'll be back next week with another episode, but in the meantime, you take care and have a great week, whatever you're doing. Bye-bye.